Grow Great is a city government leadership podcast with Lisa Norris and me, Randy Cantrell. Each week we share insights, experiences, and wisdom to help you and your leadership grow great. Our website is growgreat.com.
Have you ever been sitting there and somebody walks into your office or you're walking down the hall and one of two things happen? You say, "Hey, how's it going?" And they're like, "Well, Lisa, I wish I could have seen," you know, like it's like Eeyore from Pooh.
Yeah.
If I only had this, then I would have done this.
Right. Real high energy.
Yeah. The high energy Eeyore. Yeah. Or it's just somebody that just dumps on you. You're just like, "Oh my God," they just dump.
You don't dare ask them how they're doing because they're liable to tell you.
Yeah, you almost are like, you see them coming, you're like, "Oh God, I got to get out of the way. Yeah. I need to make a detour to the bathroom," right. Something.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it would be fun to talk about that because I've had some conversations recently, and it's always a challenge with optimism to really focus on being a light for somebody, to be show positivity, to show optimism, to help them not always see the dark side of things, but instead to focus on what's good, what good you have, what good is before you. I think that is so important as we lead people, that they see that as an example, because they will mirror that typically the way you lead. That doesn't mean everybody's going to lead like you, but if you are negative, I can almost guarantee, and you're consistently negative, your team's going to be negative too. How they approach situations, how they approach problems, how they perceive a customer's request, it's going to be a negative output because they follow the leader. So as we talk about, as we're leading people, it hit me as you and I were talking before we hit record, in talking to my even director level, the managers, I take them out to lunch. We were just talking about that. I take the directors and their direct reports to lunch. I've just started that just to get to know everybody outside so that they aren't focused on projects or statuses, but instead can see each other in a different light. Because I believe if they see me being me real, I'm very positive. I'm very optimistic. I want to be helpful. I do think it puts a different spin on the relationship as a leader because you start developing trust and rapport. And we've talked so much about knowing your people that it's important. I think you were using the term managing by walking around. What was the official term?
Yeah. Well, that was, you know, Tom Peters back in the 80s in the book In Search of Excellence, which is very long in the tooth, by the way. But it was a category killer in that book really launched business books. Prior to that, you really didn't see in bookstores, you didn't see business book session. And now it's a huge category. Well, in that book, Tom Peters talks about managing by wandering around, managing by walking around. In other words, you know, be out among the people.
Right.
Bottom line, right. Be out among the people. Well, but you're absolutely right. I mean, pessimism and optimism are both contagious.
Yeah, it's so important that we try to reflect on others. We try to provide insight that's positive, that's looking for the solution. It's just how you approach every aspect of leadership, in my opinion. You can look at everything. We've talked about this before, where you can look at everything as a threat, or you can look at everything as an opportunity. You can look at the glass half full, or you can look at it as half empty. It is all about perspective. And I don't want to minimize the amount of impact optimism and positivity have on your people. It makes a huge difference if you can help them see the positive, because if you don't, then their people, you know, you keep going down the line, their people are going to start reacting. You have to bring people up. They will perform higher. You will get to a higher performing team as a whole, and they'll start holding people accountable for that same level I don't know if it's energy, but certainly same level of optimism. And it sometimes can be kind of rare, in my opinion. Positivity and optimism can be a trait that is sometimes hard to find in a large group of people if you're in a room.
Yeah, and I think because of society and culture probably getting harder. I mean, I don't have any empirical proof about that. That's just intuition and kind of a gut. Do you guys at the city, do any of the assessments gauge any of that at all?
The zero risk that we do, the actual name of it, for those that aren't familiar, is zero risk. And it is an EQ test, not a personality test. It does talk about how people perceive challenges, and it does show a level of optimism in part of self-awareness. There's some traits that it brings out. It doesn't have an optimism category by itself, but it does reflect that in some of the responses as how they approach problems, challenges, and solutions.
And have you found that to be even mildly accurate or wildly?
Spot on.
Yeah, exactly.
Spot on.
Isn't it funny?
It is interesting, this zero risk. So we in our world, now, of course, we're not looking at it just for that, but it is a reflection. It is an indicator. And it is interesting because in that particular survey, we do it for our finalists in any, you know, not in every job. We've been trying to help managers utilize it by expressing what it does do. And it can give you candidate questions to dig further, because people, you've got 45 minutes to an hour with them. And it's interesting, when you have that 45 minutes to an hour, they can interview you really great.
Sure.
You've seen, you know, you've seen people look great on paper, and then you get them personality and they're, hello.
Yeah, that's right. They're Eeyore.
Sure, you don't want to hire me, you know,
yeah.
Or they talk about how great they are and then they can't speak to anything. We've all had them.
Sure.
Anybody listening has probably been in that experience. And then you have really great people that when you put them to work, you're like, what the heck happened? That is not what
this
I
isn't
saw
who
in 45
I hired.
Minutes.
Yeah.
No.
Where did you come from?
To detail. They aren't positive. They, you know, they can't solve for things. So this zero risk does a portion of that. It has a couple different factors, self-awareness. It has empathy scores. It has some other factors, decision-making, things like that. And it doesn't change over time because it's who you are internally. So that one I think is interesting, because as we've used it on some finalist candidates, we have rejected candidates, not solely, but because it paralleled with something we might have seen that was a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, this person, you know, can get under high stress. It talks about whether they have political savvy, whether they can deal with stress well, or whether they take it out and become negative, right, on others. It talks about teamwork and whether they're able to effectively serve on a team, or if they, it just talks about so many things. It's really fascinating. And as we look at that, when we assess that test, like I said, we have rejected candidates because of that and how it aligns with something we might have seen, like I said, the question mark. But we've also found candidates because it aligns them with a candidate fit. Now you have to find a like position in their,
mm-hmm.
you know, industry. Like, it lets you pick from this assortment. And you can also, what's really cool about that particular assessment, and then I'll get off of that as we're talking about the optimism piece, but it's relevant, is it can tell the true story of that candidate and who they really are internally. So you have less risk, which is zero risk, in hiring them. So it'll say, okay, if you're an HR, you know, like me, if you're wanting to look at Lisa Norris as an HR director, interestingly enough, I was not a good fit. I had several risks, like four risks for HR director. So you have to take it. And an example of that would be, it says, you know, the HR director should be rule followers. And it says, Lisa is high creativity. No,
not
high creativity, sees the gray,
uh-huh.
May not be a good fit, because I, but that's where you have to know the power of the test, because
the power of your specific culture too.
That's right. That's exactly right. So when I told Cheryl, I said, "Hey, I'm a high risk for this job, by the way."
Yeah.
She's like, "Well,
thanks for giving it to me."
And I said, it says that I see the gray. I may not have this. I'm not black or white. I tried to collaborate." And she's like, "Yeah, that's what we want. You definitely don't see the gray, and you don't play in the lines."
Yeah.
Right. But for us, so that's called a good risk.
Sure.
It's not aligned with what normal HR departments are. And she said, "No, that's a good risk, because I don't want somebody that plays in the lines. I do want them compliant."
Yeah.
But she said, "That's why you're good at creating classes and building curriculum and teaching, because those are so on your own. You don't have structure for those."
Well, here's why I asked about the assessment thing. So would you, and I don't know if you guys have studied this or not, but it would be an interesting exercise. The leaders in the city of Grand Prairie, I'm going to go out on it's not much of a limb, and surmise that the leaders in Grand Prairie, meaning director levels and the next level down for sure,
right,
are probably largely optimistic. That's just kind of their worldview. That in the zero risk, I don't know what that's called,
right?
But it would be curious to me how they tested in that particular assessment.
Yeah, I'd have to look at it, because we haven't tested everybody. We've tested many. Interested in it as we've shown it to them. But you're right.
As you think about the decades that you spent there, though, and the people that have gotten promoted, the people that have gotten hired, I'm not saying that there's never a negative Nelly among them. Sorry if your name is Nelly. but It's interesting to me that high performing cultures don't tend to promote that naysayer, that person who's constantly, "No, we can't do this." By and large, in my experience, I have found that those leaders who have the capacity, because they have the genuine belief, "Yes, we can." These are people that are driven to just find a way to say yes.
That's right.
Exactly.
It's not so much, and you talk about that. That is a great point. When you talk about negativity and pessimism, I know everybody listening can think of a person right now. They have named them. As soon as we said that, they're like, "Oh yeah, that's so-and-so." Because you know the character. And when you come to them with something, do they ever have a solution? Occasionally.
No, they have a pail of cold water that they're ready to throw on every idea.
That's right. They are resistant to change.
Yep.
They're resistant to a new way of doing anything. They are, they feel it can't be done, whatever it is. They feel it shouldn't be done because of some longstanding, typically it's historical. We've done it this way for 15 years.
Right.
And back in 2008, my boss told me,
right.
And here we are at 2024, it's those kind of things.
We tried something 40 years ago and it didn't work. So,
yeah. And so we aren't, it didn't work, and it's not going to work now, certainly with all the technology we have. So it's interesting, but also, and I'll go back just one thing on that zero risk. When you're talking about it as a group, the cool thing with that we have started doing in Grand Prairie, which I think is fascinating. Cheryl also thinks it's fascinating because it's a psychological developed test by a psychologist. And I think it's fascinating because you can also take your highest performers and they can develop a scoring system for Grand Prairie. What works, what makes a person successful here? Like they could, we've done it before when Tom was here for our director team. He had a discussion with them, with the president over there, and said, I don't know who they were. He said, "Here's my high performers on the executive team in all industries. These are the people that find a way, do a way, create the way, and lead the way, right? These are my go-to, doesn't matter the industry." And they created a profile for what a successful executive looks like here.
Yeah.
You compared that to anywhere else, it's going to be a high risk.
Yeah, right? Because it's your ecosystem.
It doesn't match. It's our ecosystem. So that's what was fascinating. And then as we hired, he's like, I want a zero risk.
Yeah, you're looking for that match.
Send it to me. He said, and then he kind of developed his system. There's like 9 factors. And he said, I'm willing to go 2. I'm willing to go 2. But if right. they are so far out, like it's economic development and you have to have political savvy. He says, this person has none.
Yeah,
that's too far of a risk in one area. He's not going to go.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
But it was really creative and intuitive. And so we've done that we've done it in different areas here. Once we got the directors on board, they're like, I want that. I said, it's between you and one person. Don't tell anybody else.
Yeah.
Because if anybody knows they're not on the list, that's a morale killer.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I wasn't on the A team.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, of course.
But it's fascinating. And you talk about optimism. Optimism is a component of a high performing team because like you said, they find a way, they go the way, they create the way, they lead the way, they find a yes to a no.
But I think that's part of the challenge in the hiring process of, because you can fake it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can fake it to get the job. You can't fake it once you have the job. There's the problem. But
right.
but then, you know, okay, now it's too late. I mean,
yeah, now you got 6 months of.
Yeah. Now we're behind. We're behind the eight ball.
Exactly.
The other thing that comes to my mind is it seems to me that it is so ingrained in people. It's what I keep calling this worldview. It's just this is how I see the world. This is how I see where I fit in the world. And I don't pretend to be smart enough to help somebody alter that or change that. Although I know it can be done because I have seen people do it. I just know that the person who is constantly seeing the darkness and constantly seeing the downside and constantly seeing how, you know, the million ways that this can go wrong and unable to see one way that it could possibly go right, can't change that unless they make up their mind they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that unfortunately, that's fairly rare. The good news is I think people that kind of lean toward optimism, this is just what I've seen, they can lean much further, more deeply into it. It's like going to the gym. I mean, if you just continue to exercise that muscle, and this is where I think evidence-based leadership can really play to our favor if we're committed to try to be optimistic. And by the way, we do not mean frou-frou pie in the sky,
no.
rose-colored glasses.
It's got to be genuine.
Don't even consider any risks. No, listen, we've all got to mitigate the risks and minimize the chances of failure, but to not be paralyzed by, you know, this may not work, but let's try.
Yeah.
That if we will exercise that muscle, it gets easier and easier and easier, and we get better and better. It's just like anything.
Yeah,
you know, the more we do it, the better we get.
You try to teach them, you know, with the individuals that I've worked with over time, over the years, that have a negative streak in them. It's usually, I have seen the pervasive negativity, but they don't typically last long because nobody can tolerate them. And it
right.
becomes a complaint based,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you have to act as a leader. But I'm talking about the ones that if you can think of people in your organization that will say, you know, say, hey, have we thought about this? And like, yeah, that won't work, but it's every time.
Right.
Those are the ones that I, you know, I've tried to coach and say, listen, we try to find a yes. We need to get to a yes. It
yeah.
may not be what I asked, but instead of saying, no, that's not going to work, how about we say, you know, let me think on that and get back with you, because you need to take a step back and pause, figure out what they were asking before you immediately go to the no. And get back with your team and say, hey, this was asked. Is there a way we could do that? Instead of you being the answer, if you can't see it, pause yourself and go back and say, could we do this? Because I'm thinking we couldn't. But because one, you're collaborating with your team, and more minds together is better than one mind in every case.
That's right.
Right. But go back to your team and brainstorm and put a pause from a service perspective on saying no. Because eventually people get really tired of hearing no, especially if you're in an organization that wants change and has a high pace and is looking for new and better ways to do business in every department, right? Not just
Chronic
AI.
Yeah, chronic pessimism does not ever work in any high performing culture.
Right.
It does not get rewarded. It's not sustainable. So, you know, we clearly want to help people try to go more toward a can-do kind of an attitude. There's no guarantees that it's that age old, who was it, Henry Ford, you know, whether you think you can or can't, either way, you're right.
That's right.
I mean, it's completely that at play. There are, I think, situations. It happened to me as a young leader, and I probably have told this story before, so pardon me if I'm repeating myself, but I came in one day and I had a middle-aged assistant. Secretary, that's what we called them at the time. No, I'm not being sexist. That's what we called them. And so I came in one day and I don't know, I was preoccupied and I didn't greet somebody that morning. It was some young worker. And so my assistant kind of called me on it, said she's kind of nervous, wondering if you're mad at her. And I'm like, why would I be mad at her? Well, you didn't say hi or good morning or whatever it was. Completely oblivious. Did not see it at all. Had no recognition that I had done it. And I'm not a negative Nelly. I'm not pessimistic. And I went and I made it right. I went and told the person, you know, I apologize for not, and everything was fine. But that stuck with me from then on. I mean, I was painfully aware. Okay. Eyes are on you. People are watching. You know, handle that better, you know, make sure that your outward demeanor is kind of what you want to reflect. And I'm not going to lie and say that it was just super easy. You know, it wasn't, it took some work, and I can still have days where, you know, I mean, you called me on it at some point. I don't remember. This was recently. And of course, most of, you know, my mom passed away a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know, I was preoccupied, and Lisa noted, you know, I wasn't on my game, and it wasn't that it was super negative, but you need people around you like that. This is my point. We need people around us, even those of us that describe ourselves as being optimistic and being positive.
We all have moments.
Yeah. We need people around us that can show us the mirror that we, in the moment, we don't see.
Yeah. And I think on that one, I just called you after the fact and said, hey,
yeah,
I can tell you want yourself what's going on.
Yeah.
Just to allow you time to talk and,
yeah, yeah.
And share. Cause you, and,
right.
And it was spot on, right? It was, you were going through a rough time.
Yeah. You know, and instead
and just talking
of trying
about
to,
it, I'm like, I don't even know how I helped you. And you're like, no, you helped a lot. Just listening, you know,
cause
sometimes we just got to get it out. And somebody that's safe to talk to.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I do think all of that is part of the optimism, is part of the belief in ourselves and the belief in other people that we've chosen to surround ourselves with. And hopefully you're in a city that you believe in. And if you're not, then find a city that you can believe in. I mean, man alive, don't waste your life languishing. Because there's too many places that are working really hard, like Grand Prairie, you know, to have a high performance culture and are rewarding that. Mm-hmm. To me, the word that comes to my mind from the time that we started this show, is value. Mm-hmm. You know, the value that you bring to the team. I just don't understand how pessimism helps increase that value.
Yep.
When there's empirical proof that optimism surely does.
Yeah. I was trying to find, there was a quote and I was just making sure I'm going to quote it, but I couldn't find, if those of you watching saw me looking down, I was trying to find who said it, but we've stated it before on here. And when you're talking about effective leadership, you know, you have to deal with the pessimist. You have to deal. It could be pessimism. It can be negativity, whatever that looks like. you have to deal with it. Don't let it just drag on. That would be my biggest point. You cannot let it drag on. We even talked about it. We had a lunch today and I was asking the teams how they were doing. And there was some, you know, some of them had struggles, which is natural. I wanted them feeling safe to talk about it. But it, some of them are just trying to get, you know, maybe get people on board or whatever the case is. And when we talked about negativity and pessimism, I said the same thing to them, and I've used it many times before, which is a leader is only as effective as the worst behavior they're willing to tolerate. So your teams are watching, whether you think they are or not, and how long you go with dealing with whatever it is, especially negativity or pessimism, because if they're doing it with you and you're their boss, you're their leader, can you imagine what they're doing with the customers when you're not there? I mean, it doesn't just, it's not just isolated to when they're dealing with you, because they're going to be on your best behavior with your leader. Just imagine when they're not there and they're dealing with their crew member, they're dealing with the customer that's frustrating them. Those are the things, you know, you have to deal with it. Doesn't mean you have to terminate or discipline, but you need to address it and say, this is what I expect. I expect you to have a positive outlook. You can come talk to me and we can find solutions, but I want that to change. It needs to be an expression of our service. It needs to be that you're finding ways to solve the customer's issues. And it needs to be in a manner that makes you look good and makes me look good, period.
Yeah, well, you and I have talked about that military metaphor of take the hill. You know, and every city manager wants a team of people who can take the hill. No city manager wants a team of people that, well, I'm not sure if we can take that hill. I'm not, look at that. That's a big hill. You know, nobody wants that.
Right? That's right.
We want a group of people that absolutely we can take that hill. And by the way, after we take that hill, be planning the next hill for us to take.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of people that you and I both in all of our careers see ascend, and rightfully so. I mean, it's just that whole can do. So smitten was I with this whole notion of optimism and wondering if it could be taught, if it could be learned. A guy named Martin Seligman wrote a book entitled Learned Optimism. In fact, Tasha told me, your HR director, mm-hmm. she bought a copy. I had referenced it, I guess, in one of our meetings there, and she had gone and bought it. It's an old book. I don't know if it's been updated or not, but my kids were, I don't know, they were probably in elementary school, so this is a long time ago, and there's a chapter in there about, you know, trying to help our kids learn to be optimistic. And there's even a test in there. And I remember having both of them take it. And their answers are still in the book. I've still got my copy of the book, Learned Optimism. So if you're interested in improving your own and helping your own team, there's a reading recommendation for you. I do think it can be learned. I think we can improve it. I think for some of us that may be ridiculously harder than it is for others. That's not lost on me. I understand that people have experiences and past and baggage, and that all contributes. I understand that. But I just choose to be hopeful. I choose to be hopeful that I can, in some small way, make an impact not only in my life, but in the life of other people. And, you know, and you hope to do that. We had a session there in Grand Prairie, and one of the supervisors that was part of this class, I was at one table kind of sitting in, and Lisa had us do this exercise. And after we did this exercise, I just asked, there were two other people at this table that I was at, and I asked them, I said, y'all got a name? Tell me a story about a person that really impacted you. And one of the fellows piped up and talked about an ROTC high school instructor that was just this gruff, you know, ex-military drill sergeant kind of a guy who had really made an impact. And, you know, here's this, you know, big burly guy sitting here telling me this, and he's getting teary-eyed about it and started apologizing and said, Dad, don't apologize for getting emotional about something like that. And so he's telling us this story about this person. And, you know, those are, that's the stuff right there. I mean, that's the stuff right there. Do you think that a person who's just this negative Nelly, I mean, is anybody that you're leading like that going to bring up your name at a table like that? Probably not, except in a bad way.
Right.
As a person that really made an impact in your life, somebody that really made a difference, somebody that really, because here's what I have found to be true. From the highest of highs, meaning the most successful person that I've ever sat in front of, to maybe the least successful, every single person is craving the same thing, and that's somebody who believes in them. If you don't believe that it can be done, whatever it is, if you don't believe that tomorrow can be better than today, if you don't believe that you can be better tomorrow than you were today, or that your people can't, then how can you believe in anybody? Yeah. And that's what we're all craving. And that's, I think that's the gift that leadership presents when it comes to this whole thing of optimism, is the belief in people.
Well, that's what started this podcast,
yeah.
Right? We have a belief, you and I feel, I don't want to speak for you. We have a belief that maybe sharing a little bit of insight. We're not claiming to be world-renowned experts. We're not
Speak for yourself.
But we are hoping to shed light on leadership insights and wisdom we've learned over the years that have proven to be successful for not only us, and the impact it's had on our lives, but for those that we've had the opportunity to lead, right? That we've made an impact. And wouldn't you, audience, we, Randy, I would much rather be at that table 20 years from now with somebody saying, man, this person, Lisa Norris, this person, Randy Cantrell, changed the trajectory of my career, made me a better person, gave me wisdom. That's the legacy we need to leave as leaders. You will never hear that about a negative or pessimistic person ever.
Thanks for watching and listening to Grow Great, a City Government Leadership Podcast. For Lisa Norris, I'm Randy Cantrell. Be well, do good, grow great. The website is growgreat.com.